All right. This is the Path to Millionaires podcast. I am Ryan Feldman. I am joined by Nick Drossos.
Drossos.
And before I even begin to explain who you are, I'm going to go ahead and let you just go ahead and tell everyone who you are.
I'm from Montreal, Canada. My parents are originally from Greece. I was born here. I studied, I grew up in Montreal, Parquex, a more, I hate saying lower or poor class, but that's really what it was.
Yeah.
I was a kid with braces, skinny, picked on, bullied. And when I turned about 9 or 10, I was tired of getting my ass kicked. So I went to learn martial arts. I started with Kung Fu. And then I started, standing up for myself, and I started learning how to fight and protect myself, because back then, our parents were not like, my parents really, when you got home and you got a beating, it was like, what happened? I got a beating. So what? What are you coming to me for? It's your problem,
Yeah, exactly. No, I I'm a little bit younger than you, but I grew up just barely before things started getting soft. So I know where you're coming from. My parents were the same way. And, it was one of those things where if something was going wrong, they were like, hey, you have to handle your own problems in your own way. Right.
Yeah.
And, I don't remember how old I was. I was probably a little younger, but somewhere around 7, I also started, doing Taekwondo.
Okay, cool.
But I wasn't the tiny kid. I was a little bigger, but at the same time, I was kind of nerdy. So okay. I still got kind of picked on a little bit. So I understand where you're coming from. So go on. Let's go on.
It's crazy because I always thought, I had the braces with the headgear and I was really picked on a lot. You know what I mean? So then I started learning how to defend myself, and I started learning martial arts. I went to a school that was very multicultural, where it was really pretty shitty experience in high school.
Yeah.
I grew up in a pretty, a little bit, I hate talking about it, I don't talk much about it, but a dysfunctional home, right?
Yeah.
Where there was emotional, psychological, and physical abuse, And so from a young age, I learned how to stand up for myself. And then at 16, I got kicked out of high school. So I'm a high school dropout. I've never finished high school till today.
What made you get kicked out of high school? What happened?
Well, it's because I was going to turn 18 before I went to high school, before I would finish. So at 16, they sent me to an adult school.
Oh, no.
And I later on was diagnosed, because I wanted to go back to school. I was diagnosed with ADHD and minor dyslexia.
Okay.
And at basically 16, I was kind of on my own. I was working. I dropped out of high school. I was working at McDonald's from 5 to 11. I was delivering the paper in the morning, going to school, then working at McDonald's, and I just dropped out of school, and I've been on my own ever since, right? I left the house a couple of years later. Then I was like, fuck, I don't have a high school education. What the fuck am I going to do in my life? I had, I packed my stuff. I told my parents, I'm out, I'm gone, I'll figure shit out on my own. And then I started working in nightclubs. I was promoting, and then I started bouncing, doing security in them.
Okay.
And this is where I started learning a lot of what works in real life and what works in theory, and being in these real situations where you're being confronted with real attacks. I started learning, what really works and what you need to learn to defend yourself, and as well the mindset and the importance of empowering yourself through it. And later on, I worked in clubs and bars, and then I was like, I met my ex-wife, said, okay, let me settle down, get married, have the kids, get a regular job. I wanted to shoot myself in the head because I was fucking miserable. And I was working at a hospital. I was working in maintenance. I hated my job, waking every day, doing the same thing over and over. Yet I had this talent and this gift of teaching and training, because I never stopped it. And about 10 years ago, I decided to open my business. And I decided to you know, go on YouTube and open a YouTube channel and say, fuck it, I'm just going to start teaching online.
Right.
And then from there, I said, shit, I'm going to open my own personal training business. And then one thing after another led to where I am today. Then I got divorced, lost half my shit or all my shit, slept in a one bedroom. It just keeps going, man. I'm actually telling you the quick version.
No, this sounds familiar. I grew up doing some karate. My life was pretty good. I grew up pretty good, but I also had a similar experience where I went through a divorce and my life kind of started falling apart. And I don't know if I ever want to say I was suicidal, but like I definitely got down. You know,
you know what? We probably, like, I mean, I know for me, it's weird because I have a problem saying it when I do know people. And I did go through that phase at 23, 24, where I was before I met my ex-wife. Cause at one point I just, my whole life crashed when I hit rock bottom.
I think that's very common, by the way. I think a lot of people like ignore how you get lost. You know what you're doing. You're down. There's like, especially if you went to college, I think college is this really fun time. And then you get after you graduate from college and you get lost. You don't know what you're doing and your friends aren't there. And it's a very confusing and a very scary time. And if things don't kind of go right for you, it's very easy to get upset and down. Just that's a tough age for anybody.
It is. On that. Like, I mean, I always go back, like I'm going to be 43 next week. Right. And And it's funny because I train a 22, 23-year-old, and I'm thinking, holy shit, what the fuck did I know at that age?
Nothing.
What did I know? I thought I knew everything. I was this.
Oh, I get
you
it.
Know, I mean, I only found, and I say this honestly, I only found like a purpose and happiness and content and fulfillment in my life only a couple of years ago, man, that I really felt that I'm aligned with, you know, who I am and where I'm going. And
that's amazing.
It's the greatest feeling. It's a feeling of peace.
Right. Well, let's back it up a little bit. So, your parents kick you out of the house, right?
Well,
you left the house.
it was kind of like a 50-50, right? Like, I mean, when you're in an abusive home, you're like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you know, people say, well, that's all they knew. That's where they came from. And they did better than their parents. Yes and no, but you know what I mean? I don't use that excuse for my son. So okay. I believe it's a cop-out when I hear that shit.
But
certain things are common sense. Eh?
They beat you up. They made your life rough and you decided to find a better way.
That's right. And, you know, sometimes I try to give them credit that, you know, hey, that's all they knew. And yeah, they had a much shittier life than I did. But, I always say at the end, you know, we are a product of our choices. You know what I mean? Right. That's all it is. So, you can't blame anybody but yourself for what you do, you know? So,
So what was that first night like when you left and you're on your own? And you, I mean, you're still a kid, you know?
I remember it was scary as well, knowing that I didn't have a high school education. I had nothing until today. I don't, like, my girlfriend tells me, maybe you know, go back to school. I'm like, I don't even know what the fuck I'd go do in school. You know what I mean? Yeah, I love psychology and therapy because I spent, like, and I say it openly, I spent 15 years in therapy with a coach because I was very self-destructive as a child because I was so angry all the time. Yeah. And I really found myself in the last 15 years working with her and peeling everything off and finding and making peace with all my past and saying, I always tell people I wouldn't change a single thing because I am the person I am because of these. My resilience, my strength, my survival, my fight out in the street in life comes from that source.
Yeah, and then you start wondering, you know, if you hadn't gone through these hardships, what kind of a person would you have become, right?
You know what? It's so true. And people who know me, and like, I mean, I'm giving you the soft side of my story because and I'm writing a book in a couple of years because there's stuff we, you know, my sister, we've kind of made an agreement not to share, you know, like our personal stuff because it's just too much for all of us. And
I understand that.
But I look at sometimes at my son, right? And there's no urgency. He's 11 years old. He there's no urgency. He's not worried about if there's food in the fridge. Yeah. He doesn't have to, you know, he's not 13 years old. And your dad tells you, all right, you're going to start working from 4 to 8, and you're going to be washing buildings with me. You're 13 years old, and you're washing toilets Monday to Friday. And you go to school, right? And he doesn't give two fucks.
Yeah.
Right? And all that, to me, was like just were lessons, life lessons that made me stronger, resilient, more fearless.
Exactly.
I'm not afraid of, I can't say I'm not afraid of anything, but very little things scare me or do anything to me now.
That resonates with me because I grew up with a pretty soft life overall. My parents are great. They raised me to be, you know, a good person, but like I grew up with a silver spoon. So when things started going wrong, it was jarring. And, you know, at the time it seemed really confusing going through it. So like my first semester in college, I almost flunked out. And then I recently went through a really rough divorce where my ex-wife was on drugs, and these were incredibly hard to deal with situations. And at the time it's like, I don't know how I'm gonna get through it. But then I look back on both those moments and I'm like stunned at how much they shaped me into the person I am today. So when you say that you're proud of who you are today and you don't want to change anything, it resonates with me. I understand where you're coming from.
That's how we built our character. Yeah. Through these moments. And I like, it's really funny, right? I have a friend of mine who's had the most amazing life.
Right.
The greatest parents. His parents were millionaires. He wanted something. He got a car, whatever he wanted. He's miserable and he's unhappy.
Yeah.
And he realizes today, because he's had life so easy, any little bump,
yeah,
it shakes the whole world off him.
Exactly.
He is unable to deal with the reality of life because your parents, society, everybody's only going to be able to protect you and be soft with you for so long. At some point, shit is going to hit the fan for you.
Yeah.
And you're better off learning when you're at a young age how to deal with these little problems. They say small kids, small problem, big kids, big problems.
Right.
Well, those little moments, and I'm very rough with my son. I'm very loving as a father. I give my son extreme love, the love I never got from my father, zero. Like, my father never told me he loved me, never played with me. I feared the man when he used to walk in the house, right? Because we never knew what was walking in. I'm the complete opposite with my son. But there's also a side where, you know, I let him know that, you know, shit's not going to, you know, daddy, you like, it's not fair. I go, get used to it. Life is not fair. Get used to it.
Right.
I go, nobody gives a shit about your feelings. Well, what do you mean? Well, that's what it is. I know people tell you you're great at what you do, like if he does something, but I go, you're not that great. You're okay. You need to work on it.
And it's true. And I think people need that reality check. And I wish more people would share that because, you know, the way the millennial generation was raised, and I know people like to shit on the millennials, but like, you know, I was one of the older millennials. So I felt like I had like a little bit of that realistic side of me still. And I had older brothers. They kind of toughened me up a little bit. They gave me some of that honest truth that we need to hear. But like, the way we were raised was like, life is great. You're special. You guys are gonna be the best thing ever.
Oh,
until we were graduating college, and then they're like, good luck. And it's like,
good luck.
What do you mean? It's like, no, you guys are on your own. You guys are great. You guys are awesome. Good luck. And it's what? No, you said we were special. And then 2 years ago, the economy collapsed and now jobs seem a little bit harder to find. Like, oh no, just pick yourself up by your bootstrap. You know, it went from this weird dynamic of like, everything was about self-esteem. And then all of a sudden it was like, figure it out. You know,
You know what the hard part is? Because when your parents tell you,
right,
you're special, you're this, you're that, at one point, your boss won't give a fuck about how special you are.
It doesn't matter.
Your mother thinks you are. Your mother thinks you're special. Great. I think you're a fucking idiot. So who cares, right?
So yeah.
This idea. And like I tell my son has an extreme talent in music.
Right.
And I tell him, Noah, you have a lot of talent, but if you don't work hard at it, it
exactly
ain't gonna go anywhere.
Yeah, and that's where some of us got lucky. I got lucky in that I fucked up a few times. So my first year in college, I almost flunked out. I was like, oh, I'm special, but only if I make it work. And then like I I didn't get kicked off the basketball team, but I got knocked off the starting lineup. And that was like another one of those moments where it was like, oh, okay, I'm special unless I don't work hard enough. And then suddenly I'm less special. And there were these little like eye-opening moments. But I think somehow between my generation and this next generation, they went from trying to protect your feelings to being like trying to protect you even when you fail. Whereas the millennials got this like weird participation. I don't think that's as big of a deal as people make it out to be. I feel like we were told we were special, but when we fucked up, they were like, all right, well, do better. You know, like they weren't harsh on us, but they still told us we were wrong.
When we look at the millennials, I think it's the parents' fault because we're the ones feeding them this shit. Right? I mean, I talk to my son like a man. I don't talk to him like a little boy. I'm a little bit rough sometimes, but I'm like, look, I do it to prepare him for real life. You know what I mean?
How old are your kids?
I just have one boy. He's 11.
Just one boy. And he's okay. Yeah. That's a tough age. I don't know where that generation's going.
But you know what? Like I said, it's funny because sometimes people hear me talk to him and it's like, and here's the thing. He respects me. Right. He respects me. He looks up to me. And this is a little bit crazy what I'm going to say, and some people might take it out of context. He does have a little bit of fear.
I think it's important.
There's a little bit of fear. Yeah. He knows that, hey, that shit won't fly with me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Don't you ever disrespect me ever again. I don't care if you're my son. You know what I mean?
That used to be common. You know, I grew up with a little bit of fear from my father, and he definitely grew up with a little bit of fear from his father. And his father was pretty like low key and easy. Honestly, it's probably his mother that was scarier. You know, but you go back a generation or two, there was always that little bit of fear that you had, and it made you respect them more. So no, I think that's missing in today's generations. I'm going to do a video on this soon. I haven't written it out yet, but I think the greatest problem right now is the lack of assertive male father figures.
Totally.
And in some cases, like the guy is completely gone. And it's really easy to say it's the Supreme Court's fault. It's the family court system. It's the woman that left. There's a million reasons. It's not just one easy to fix answer.
See, I'm going to say this, probably people I personally know maybe will.
My followers will probably like you for it.
One of the reasons why I got divorced is because I couldn't be the father I wanted to be with my ex-wife.
Couldn't you be that?
Because she always kind of used the fact that she knew I didn't have the best upbringing. Yeah. So it was always like, well, you don't know how to be a father. You never had one. Well, you don't know. I was raised better. Therefore, you know, and it was this idea that she's the female and she knows much better what the child needs than what I'm going to give them.
She would kind of manipulate you. And
she would manipulate me. Yes. Into thinking that. I won't say to a certain extent. Yes. She also, we had different upbringings and different visions of how we wanted to raise.
Right.
And mothers are always more protective, and the fathers are always the ones who are going to say, get up, kid. You're okay. You could do it. There's a little bit of a balance in that, and that's perfect. Mm-hmm. But when it swings too much on one side and the father can't tell his wife, like, look, you know, he's a boy. Don't worry. He's going to get up. Yep. Then the father shuts down. He lets the wife or the mother take care of the child. And then, you know, you're raising a little, not plastic, one of those, you know, glass.
Like a bubble boy?
Like a bubble boy. And I'm like, and then you're raising this child with entitlement, thinking that he's the greatest, he's the most beautiful, he's the most kindest, he's great, he could do no wrong. And then eventually he realizes that shit, like, I mean, I've created this false world around me.
Yeah.
And I've always said it. One of the best decisions I ever made as a father was getting divorced. Because this is an actual true story. The first time I was with my son alone was when I got divorced. The lawyer said, you're going to be with him this weekend. I remember he was 3. I'd never been alone with him, like, took him alone.
It's scary, isn't it?
So I'm looking at him. I'm like, okay, what the fuck do I do with this kid? I'm like, shit. And I remember I'm in my Jeep. I put him in the back. I'm looking at him. I'm like, okay, what do I do with him? I took him to McDonald's to the park, and I'm looking at him. I'm like, you know what I mean?
I do.
But I never had spent that time alone. And now it's like, I was like, okay, now I can raise him the way I want to raise him. But 2 years later, he was doing jiu-jitsu. He was doing Thai boxing. I did whatever the hell I wanted to do with him. And I always say it was the best decision I did for my son. And because I never got any of that stuff, I say this openly. I told my parents, you know, I told them, I said, everything you guys did, I will do the fucking opposite. Everything you didn't give me, I will give my son. And I will not use your shitty life and my shitty life as an excuse to pass it on. I go, that vicious cycle ends with me.
So was it your father that was hard on you, that was vicious to you? Was it both of them, or was your mom like kind of the silent partner?
My mom was like manic depressive.
Yeah.
Borderline disorder.
Yeah.
A bit of paranoia. It's like, I've never actually shared this. I don't say all the stories, but it's only now that I realize that she's been on Xanax and Valium for like 30, 40 years. Her brain is fried. Yeah. She was, you know, if you want to call it stoned, she would work, take her Xanax, be abusive, swear at us, scream at us,
yeah,
you know, shit on us, then tell us she loves us. And then an hour later, again, you're stupid, you're good for nothing, I should have never had you. So when you're a kid, you're like, what the fuck's going on? Why am I so, what's wrong with me? And it took me many, many years, and only a few years ago, to realize that she's mentally unstable and sick. And it doesn't show because you don't physically see the pain, but in here, she's not well.
Right.
And as much as I try to show the compassion towards her today, I still can. So I see them once or twice a year, but I've kept my distance from them because at one point, I'm very picky with who I leave in my circle. I tell people, like, you got to get rid of toxic people. It doesn't matter who they are. And it's the best thing I ever did in my life. I cut people out right away. You want to stay in my life? Great. You're with a soldier. I will take a bullet for you. I will do anything for you. But if you take advantage of my kindness, or you see it for weakness, or you try to step on me, you're gone. Click out. And there's no second chance.
Yeah.
I'm very harsh like that.
I think that's an underrated quality. I've seen this in a lot of people. My ex-wife was BPD, kind of a similar thing where she had drug problems, and at times it was like legal drugs. So it puts you in this awkward position where you start talking to somebody that's normal and you explain to them like, oh, she's got this addiction to this drug. And they're like, oh, is it heroin? I'm like, no, it's these opiates. This, you know, years ago. So they hear that and they're like, well, are those illegal? And I'm like, well, they're not, but she's using them wrong. And they're like, well, so what? Sometimes I take too much Tylenol. I'm like, I don't think you understand what's happening here. And it becomes this weird kind of conversation where you can't explain how crazy it can make somebody. They don't, it's like alcohol is legal too. You know, there's nothing wrong with drinking a couple beers. But there's a big difference between drinking a couple beers and drinking 10 beers multiple times. And you see that in the way that a person, you know, acts. And, you know, I think it's very healthy to set boundaries where, like, if you want to be in my circle, here's how it works. But if you're going to act this way, you're out. And it's hard when it's family. That's a real trick. It's tough when it's family.
I think everybody needs to learn that. It's one of the most important things. Like, I mean, for every listener, everybody I know, and I say this to my son, like, you know, if people, we teach people how to treat us. I tell them, no, remember that. Do not allow anybody to disrespect you.
Yeah.
But at the same, you cannot ask for something you don't give.
Yeah, exactly.
If I cannot give it, I cannot ask for it. It's as simple as that. So if I ask for respect, I give respect. If I ask for kindness, I give kindness.
What was that moment where you realized that you deserve better than the treatment you were giving? What made you realize that you deserved respect? How did you flip that switch? Because most people get stuck in that stage where people treat you like shit, and then you start treating other people like shit. Like, that's very common where people get stuck in that cycle.
You know, I'm going to tell you this, your viewers and listeners are going to love this. I attracted many toxic women. And I realized that stemmed from the women like my mother I attracted. I attracted the abusive, angry, you know, unstable. And I'm not saying we're all a little bit unstable. We're all a little bit crazy, but there's levels to it.
Right.
And I realized that I'm attracting women that resemble my mom to a certain extent. And I don't want that in my life anymore. I don't need to attract that anymore. Why do I keep doing it? So that was one thing, because they're not in my life anymore, because I realized that I can't have that relationship with them. And I've tried, but when my mom had cancer, I didn't speak to them for 5 years or 4 years when I heard they had cancer, you know, and she was good for about 2 weeks, whatever. And then she went back to who she was, but she can't help it. She's not well, right? And instead of going to get self-help, basically, they just fucking medicate people. We live in a society where everything's take a pill. You're depressed, take a pill. You're anxious, take a pill. And I tell people, I go, guess what? People tell me, I'm depressed, I don't know why. I start talking to them. By the end of the conversation, I said, you know what? I'd be depressed too if I were you. What do you mean? Sounds pretty shitty, your life.
Exactly. Yeah. But they get hung up on, how do I fix this today? Whereas most solutions are going to take 30, 60, 90 days. I don't
know.
You know
what? I was in a marriage where I was unhappy.
Yeah.
I was working at a hospital where I hated my job, making 30 grand a year. My health had deteriorated. I was broken down. I was sick. I didn't have communication with my son. I would go to the groceries. I would work 12 hours a day, go to the groceries, and look at the cans for 2 hours because I didn't want to go home.
Wow.
Right? So, and when I decided to just change my life, I built my business. I got divorced. I lost half my shit. I slept in a one-bedroom. I locked myself in a one-bedroom. I lived in a one-bedroom. Right?
Right.
And I drank for 2 days. I almost drank myself to death, I remember, because I was so much pain, I couldn't handle it. And I remember I got up that morning and I'm fucking hangover. I was like, I thought I was going to kill myself. Like, I couldn't handle it anymore. And I'm looking in the mirror and I said, Nick, you've been through so much shit. This is not what's going to break you.
Yeah.
And then I said, fuck it. Put on my shoes. Or I said, fuck it. You know, and I built my, you know, I worked back on my business. My business fell. Boom. I wrote down my goals, my plans. I started writing everything down. I started, you know, I was working with my coach and my therapist. I started becoming a better father. I started training. I started focusing on the people that I care, cutting out all the toxic and shitty people out of my life without even explanation. I just block, delete, don't answer the phone.
Yeah.
Fuck you. I don't give a fuck anymore.
Exactly. And you went from focusing on all the dark shit and you found the right stuff to focus on. You know, you got your business, you got your son, you got back getting yourself back in shape. So you found all these better things to focus on when it's, I think so many people get stuck in this trap where you start focusing on all the negative shit that's happening. And then when you focus on that, it's like, if you ever take a pen on a piece of paper and you try to draw a line, that pen seems to find its way wherever you're looking at. So, you know, if you're looking at the bottom, you want to draw a line straight across, the line goes down. If you look to the right where you want it to go, the line goes where you want it to go. And if you start focusing all the negative shit, your life just magically seems to find its way to the negative shit. And when you start focusing on the better thing, somehow you find your way to this better shit. It sounds like magic, but it actually happens.
Here's the thing, right?
Right.
People who know me now and are around me constantly, and I'm with an amazing, like, woman, like just unbelievable, right?
Yeah.
And she we're together almost every day, and she sees I'm always in a good mood. I'm always
grateful. You seem happy. You do.
And you want to know why? Because I spent half my life being pissed off, being angry, hating the world, blaming my parents, blaming my teacher that told me that I was, my teachers told me, you're dumb, you were stupid. They told me I'd be surprised if you amount to anything when I left high school, right? I had all the odds against me to ever make anything of myself. So anybody who's watching or listening to me, like, I am the living proof. I coach people online. And I mean, sometimes people come in the street, they recognize me, you know, I grew up, I'm like, so what's your story? I grew up in a poor neighbor. I go, me too. My parents were abusive. Me too. Well, you know, I don't have a high school. You know, I don't have an education. I didn't finish college. I didn't finish high school. I go, buddy, what's your excuse? With me, it doesn't fly. It doesn't. Right. I've never taken medication, anxiety, depression, nothing. And I've been through depression. I've been through anxiety moments. But here's the difference between me and most people, I believe. I didn't have a choice to shake it off and move on. Because, you know, people tell me, what motivates you? I have no choice. If I don't get up in the morning, my mortgage is not being paid. My son is not getting his child support, Mike's wife. I'm the only breadwinner, right? Yeah. So I gotta make shit happen, whether I like it or not, rain or shine, if shit hits the fan, I'm getting up and I keep moving forward. And if I'm that grateful today, it's because I've been in the other side of darkness.
Yeah.
And I say to myself, fuck, it's been such a good ride. And now, like I said, not a lot of shit scares me. I'm like,
yeah. Isn't that funny how that happens?
What's gonna happen?
I like that. Divorced.
I've lost my shit. I've been like practically bankrupt, or I've lost.
Yeah.
I've fought in the ring. I've got my ass kicked. I fought in the street. I got my ass kicked. One of the greatest stories I'm going to tell you, you're going to laugh, right? I remember I'm at the lawyer's office.
Right.
I paid $30,000 of lawyer fees.
Yeah.
Right. And without any help now. No parents to support me, no money. It's like, I got to fucking come up with 30 G's to pay her. And I'm sitting at the office and I'm paying her. And I remember, like, yes, I'm going to fuck. And I'm crying. I'm tearing. And I'm shaking. And she looks at me. She goes up to me, you know, Nick, it's going to get better, you know? I go, Guilen, do I get a shot of vodka with that or a drink? And I'm crying because I'm trying to make the best out of it. I'm trying to make this a fucking joke. She looks at him and she goes, you know, Nick, you're gonna be all right. You know, you're gonna be good. Like, don't worry. And I remember I was like, and there was those moments where I said, maybe I should have stayed in my relationship.
Yeah.
Maybe I should have stayed.
Would have been easier.
It would have been, but I said, fuck. Would I be a miserable bastard today? And I tell this, my quote on my Twitter is, settle for nothing less than greatness.
Yeah.
Because I tell people, when people tell me, oh, it's not that bad, I go, guess what? It's bad. Yeah. I tell people, is it great? Not, it's okay. It's okay. It's pretty shitty. Is it great? Is your health great? Is your mindset great? Your relationship with your kids, the people around you, is it great or is it okay? Are you settling? Because to me, settling is a form of a spiritual suicide. It's like every day you're cutting yourself.
Yeah.
Because you're settling on some shit.
I try to explain this to guys all the time. There's a million quotes about it. I don't even know who said it first, but this line of men are living quiet lives of desperation. I forget who said it. It gets misquoted all the time, but I think that's incredibly common. And there are so many people, and I can say this honestly because it's been, I will admit it, this has been me at times. There's it's so easy to find that girl and be so happy that she will put up with your bullshit, that you will put up with all of her shit just to stay with her. And magically, somehow, if you decide to make yourself better, you start getting in better shape, you start feeling more confident about yourself, maybe start working on your own little side gig and actually making a decent income, suddenly you feel better about yourself and you don't want anything to do with this horrible life. Like, I spent so many years with women that were just not good enough for me. And the worst part was, I thought I wasn't good enough for them. And I think that's most men.
That you nailed it, man. You fucking nailed it. And yeah. And you know, this is what I tell men is build yourself.
Yes.
Irrelevant of your wife or your girlfriend.
Yes.
Build yourself. This is what I'm gonna teach my son. Build your career, build your life, build everything around you.
Yeah.
Not around the woman, because if she leaves, everything falls apart.
Yep.
So I look at it, I'm the driver of the car. You want to come in the passenger? I'm more than happy to have you on the ride. Yep. You don't want break? Get out of the car next.
That's my new thing. Exactly.
That's my new thing. And it's not to be like, oh, well, you're a male chauvinist. You know, I'm not macho. I'm not at all.
No.
If you met my girlfriend and like, I treat her amazing, but she treats me the same way.
Right.
I don't get into these relationships anymore. And I'm kind of like, very like you know, when we started dating, I was very clear with her. I have rules, expectations, clear and cut. I don't accept you swearing, screaming, disrespecting me, lying, playing games, cheating.
Yeah.
If you do that, out, instant, like the wind, you're gone. No second chance. And here's the thing. What I'm asking from you is I'm committing to you as well.
Yeah. I like that. I think I like what you said about the swearing and the screaming. Now, you know, if the girl is going to like trip over something and she says, damn it, that's something. But
yeah,
if
she's, that's fine.
If she says, God damn you, that's a very different kind of swearing. And I think, go ahead.
You nailed it. That's exactly what I was going to say. I loved it. I'll let you go. It's because I think it's so important.
Well,
people, when I say that, they say, well, it's swearing. No, like, I mean, if I'm like, fuck, shit, you know, TV doesn't fucking work. That's different. But if I had a bad day,
right?
Like if I had a bad day and I,
just
like my girlfriend's always like, how's your day? I'm like, good. I love what I do. I wake up every day. I love what I do for a living. I like the clients I train. I love the stuff I do. So I'm like, you know, so much of what you're going to do, I tell people, is pick a career that you love. Because if it's shitty, it's going to affect everything else around it. You come home, you're in a bad mood. You're going to bitch. You're going to take it out on somebody. But if you love what you do, you're going to come home and you're like, hey, how's your day? Good.
Yeah.
That wasn't fun.
You train some 100%. Yeah, I've gotten into days where I'm like, I'm not having a good day because something happened with work and, you know, I'm being cranky and I start getting moody and the girlfriend knows it. She sees it. And when I was younger, I was less in control of this and it would become this thing where I would affect everyone around me and I would be mean and angry and I would hate myself afterwards. But now, you know, I figured it out. Now I know that, like, okay, things are bad. That's okay. I'm just going to go throw some weights around for a little bit. I'm going to go for a run, and I'll be fine. And there's times where it may not seem convenient, but I'm like, hey, I'm going to go run for, you know, 5 or 6 miles. I'm just going to be gone. And the girlfriend's like, yeah, okay, go ahead and do that. And even if she doesn't necessarily want me to be gone, she understands that that's part of my process now. And I come back, she's like, how you doing? I'm like, man, I feel great. And
you just have that communication with her and you have that standard and it's like, you know what I mean? Like, you know, if let's say you have a bad day and you come in and you tell your wife or your girlfriend, babe, I'm having a really bad day. I just need to let it out. It's not, I just need to let it out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go just, I did this and she did this. You let it out. You're good. Okay. Let's go. Fuck it. We'll move on. That's it.
But especially as a man, I think men need that physical outlet. We need to get some kind of outlet. Every Monday, I know you're big into Taekwondo, but every Monday, I go and I help assist with the kids' class in karate, and I do my own class, and then afterwards, we have our own training class where it's a small group of us that are like really into working out, where we're training basically for Spartan races. And it's only on Monday where we do that Spartan race training. So I get to work out with these people that I really like. We get to work out really hard and like bust our ass. I love Mondays. I wake up on a Monday and I am excited. Everyone's whining about it. I'm like, this is the day where I get to work out with the people I love and have a great time. Like, this is awesome.
You know, if you could wake up on a Monday, like, I mean, I always go back to when I used to work at the hospital.
Yeah.
And I used to work from 7 a.m. to 3:30, right? And right. like I said, I used to hate my job. I used to fucking wash toilets. I felt like I used to put on my janitor uniform and I used to see my dad. I'm like, what the fuck? And I remember I was cleaning the toilet and I'm thinking, is this my fucking life? Yeah. Shoot me right now.
Yeah.
Like, and I had to do the transition to build my business while I was working at the hospital, two jobs with a newborn. If I tell you I was pulling 12 to 15 hours a day, plus doing the groceries, plus I was the only breadwinner in the house, it was a lot. Most men would have cracked.
Yeah.
I lasted for a few years, but then I couldn't do it anymore. But I remember that feeling of it's Friday, you're excited. It's Sunday, you're like, oh, shit. I don't have it. Every day is a fucking great day for me.
Yeah, I can tell.
Here's the thing. I built this. That's what I told people. I built it. It just didn't happen. I am today who I am. Over years of molding and breaking and cutting and putting and pasting and spending thousands and thousands of dollars with an amazing coach and therapist. Because when I was like, what, it was 24, 25, when 20, around there, where I was like literally, you know, I was completely broken down. And when I met her, she fucking changed my life. She really did. And her approach as a therapist is not, she's not like, oh, poor, like I saw a few before I picked her. And she's like, she's not the type who's like, oh, poor you. How does it feel? How does your emotions feel? Are you okay? She's like, yeah, I get it. And what are you going to do about it?
Yeah, I like that. I like that.
And I spent 15 years with her. So I've molded into that as well. So all these people always come to me now. Like I have all these unhappy married men who come to me. Yeah. They're like, bro, how did you know when you're going to get divorced? How was it with the kid? I'm like, oh shit. And one of my friends, I know he's on the brink of divorce. I'm like, bro, I go, look, I know your wife. Just get ready because she's going to take you to the fucking grinder.
Well, it's hard to explain because once you've been through it, you look back and you're like, that's over. I get it. And usually one person doesn't see it.
Yeah.
But once you've been through it, you can kind of tell. And it sucks because you can explain it to the person. And most likely they're going to hate you. They're going to call you jaded. And they're going to say that you're being an asshole. But really, it's like, look, I'm trying to save you a lot of hurt. And after the hurt, I'm trying to save you a lot of money.
You know, I'll never forget what my lawyer told me when I got divorced.
Yeah.
She goes, Mr. Drossos, it's only when you get divorced that you found out who you really are.
Yeah.
I love that line. I'll tell you why. Because people will tell me, well, divorce is not pretty. It brings out the worst in people. No, it doesn't.
It brings out the honest part of the person.
Who's the fucking liar, scammer, crook, bullshitter, yeah. manipulator? And
I had the same deal. So me and my ex-wife.
And I'm not saying this is in my case.
No, it's everyone.
I'm not in the mood to get a lawyer's letter. I'm
good. If you ever want to understand the dynamics of a divorce, go talk to a lawyer because they've done it, right? So, you know, no, I went up. This is the honest to God truth, and like. Today I explain this to people and they're like, oh, you hate your ex, don't you? I go, I don't hate her. I get along with her pretty good. We've got a decent relationship and like we got married. Like, I don't know why people expect us to hate each other just because it ended. Like, at some point it was okay. So like it shouldn't be hateful. But me and the ex-wife went to the lawyer together to split up because we both agreed together that we were better apart and we were happy with it. And I'm trying to explain this to the lawyer and he goes, okay. And then we talk for a while and he kind of splits up and he looks at me and he goes, this isn't going to end well.
And I'm like, that's hilarious. They know. And man, that's fucking funny because I say shit all the time.
Yeah.
Because
and he was right.
I know guys. I go, no, oh, my wife is different. I'm like, yeah. We'll see about that. Really,
yeah.
Step into the case. I know a few people who've gone divorced. It's been good. But I've also seen some guys. And you know what? It's fucked up because we live.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't give a fuck what I say. Meaning, I say based on my experience, and if there's a feminist who watches this and tells me, well, I want to debate you, let's go, honey. Okay? I don't mind.
We'll do it.
Because yeah. I know enough men who've lost their kids,
yeah.
who don't see their kids, and these are great fathers and great men.
Yeah, exactly. Because
the system, in many ways, is against us.
Yeah. It is. Yeah.
So when I hear shit about how it's unfair, I'm like, yeah, really? Go through the divorce system, and you tell me how fair it really is for men and for women.
Yeah.
You tell me how it is to pay alimony, child support, yeah. how, you know, you can't even ask your wife, well, where's the money I'm giving you going? You can't, you're not allowed no. to ask that.
It doesn't go to the kids. Why? It just goes to the woman. Why? Hopefully why? The woman spends it with the kid. Say, yeah.
Show me the bills of yeah. where you're spending the money that goes for my son.
Yeah.
I'm saying this is my case.
No,
it's not my case.
It's common. They just, it's weird. They kind of just assume that the guy is, you know, this Fred Flintstone kind of guy that makes a lot of money. And then the woman's the one taking care of the house. And I had a funny moment in my divorce where they were like, well, you know, you guys built this house together. And I'm like, well, I paid for this house. And she goes, well, she took care of the house. And I forgot I was in court. I forgot I was on court. I kind of let slip. I go, apparently you haven't seen my house. It was just a mess. She wasn't taking care of it. So.
Yeah, like, she was taking care of the house. Fuck, I should have hired a maid in that case. Then she could tell me she's taking
exactly.
care of the house. I should have paid her. She should have
paid the maid. Yeah. Well, now I'm with the babysitter. So we'll see how that goes. But it's true. You know, it's such a strain. I don't know how what the – I complained about the family – court system all the time. It's unfair, and you know, if you're gonna complain about the system, you're supposed to bring a solution, right? And I don't know if I have one, because there isn't one, because guys like us that do the great thing, and maybe the woman wasn't so good, but for every guy like us, it's actually like the breadwinner and taking care of the kids and being a good example, and you're clearly being a good example. There are the deadbeats out there that make it hard for us to make our case.
I agree, but you know what? And there's also bad mothers. But
yeah. Like, oh yeah. Absolutely.
We don't want to talk about that. You know what I mean? We don't talk about
the bad. It gets a little touchy, doesn't it?
Or the gold diggers, because I know a lot of gold diggers, man. I know a lot of gold diggers, man. I'm, you know what I mean? I'm surrounded by a lot of wealthy, successful men that I train, and you know they're there for their money. It's not there because I love you, dear. It's all in the name of love. You know what I mean? And again, people might shit on me up for this, but
I'm telling you,
again, there's some great women. Like there's both sides in it. And I think the important thing I tell people is you become the man of who you want to attract.
Well, here's one thing that I've been thinking about this for a long time, and I don't know how to explain it. Maybe this is the moment. But when I was younger, I was always looking out for the hot girl at the bar, or the girl that was sexy and she was interesting and she was fun and she was funny. And then one day a switch flipped, and it probably wasn't until after I had a kid. And I started thinking, and I'm like, wait, that girl with a really big rack, how would she act if my son knocked over a cup of juice? Like, would she be a good mother? It never occurred to me when I was younger. And like, I don't know how to explain that to a younger guy. Like, you don't need to only look for the girl that's the most fertile, because that's where your, you know, monkey brain is thinking. Like, is she going to be a good mother? And I don't think a 24-year-old man is even considering it.
Look, I was a bouncer. I was in the bouncer in the coolest clubs in Montreal. I used to wear a fur coat, fucking drink outside. I used to get all the girls. I swear to God, I mean, one of my ex-girlfriend was, her name was Cindy. She was half Italian, half Pakistani, 5'11". I used to walk down the streets. The car used to stop and go like this. She was beautiful, but she was also a great person. One of the nicest girls I dated.
Right.
But I also dated... Like, I mean, when you're young, you're like, oh my God, she's hot. What a mess. And that.
But you're not thinking. Yeah, exactly.
Now, you hit an age, you're like, great. Yeah, I got to be attracted to you.
Yeah.
That's important.
It is.
But I don't need the bombshell.
Yeah.
With, like, if you, I kind of look at it like this, right? Like, okay, she's got to be, like, what are your priorities?
Yeah.
Right? My therapist made me write the 50 things the 50. Woman has to have. Yeah, 50. Find as many things that you want. So, yeah, I wanted her to be Greek. It doesn't matter if she's not Greek. I wanted her to be
Greek, right? That's fair.
Yeah, I'm Greek, yeah. I want her to be kind, caring, you know, smart, independent, right. Yep. You don't want, here's the thing I tell men. You want a girl who wants you but doesn't need you.
Yeah, that's a hard thing to sell on a guy, though. They want that, like, desperation. They want that, like,
you
want
to know why? Because men pick a girl that needs them because they feel that they're going to get control over them.
Yeah.
So they're like, she needs me, therefore she won't leave me.
But ironically, when they need you, you're, like, in less control.
Absolutely, because at the end, she's got you by the balls.
Exactly. Exactly. But,
I mean, if a good relationship to me is where I don't need you, you don't need me, we choose to be together and grow together.
That's a healthy relationship. It's a rare relationship. That's healthy. Yeah.
It's very hard to find because most people are not happy with themselves.
Yeah.
They're codependent. So because they're not happy, they're always trying to find a partner who's going to fulfill their happiness. Who's going to complete them? Who's going to help them find the fucking unicorn? I tell guys, get that shit over your head. Focus on you being happy.
Yeah, it's funny. There's like, you know, the red pill. You ever hear about that?
Yeah, like, I read his book.
Rolo Tomasi. It's actually, I like the part of the book.
After my last relationship, I read it.
Yeah, I think when you go through a rough relationship like that, I think it's one of those books that gives you a lot of perspective. But the idea of like that unicorn's in there, you know, you get that one-itis, and I think a lot of guys get hung up on that. Yeah.
Look, you know what? When you don't believe in the one-itis, you also believe in there's many ones, and it's for you to pick the right one for you.
Yeah. I remember watching like The Bronx Tale when I was younger and getting like hung up on that, you know, and I forget the name of it. There's some mafia guy in The Bronx Tale is talking about, he's like, you only get three shots. There's three women that come in your life. And like, I'm watching this as a 12 or 14 year old kid. I'm like, makes a lot of sense to me.
Well, I can tell you it's actually true. Like, I mean, I've only had three or four.
The concept works. It's not 100%.
You know, I've had girls, like, you know, like, in my life, in and out, but there's only three or four that actually marked me. And I look at my relationship today, and for now, at this moment, it's the most balanced relationship. But it's because we're two people who are very well with ourselves first, independently. Yeah. There's no codependence. We don't need each other.
So hard to explain to people that you need to be alone for a while and with, you know.
Wait, I'm going to share something with you. Okay. Yeah. Sorry, I'm cutting you off.
No, go ahead.
Your audience is going to fucking love this because I've never shared this with anybody. I don't know why, because I like you. I feel your energy and it's like, so.
I'm happy to hear it.
When I broke up with an ex-girlfriend, this was the most toxic relationship I was ever in.
Right.
To the point that, like, I mean, there was, you know, to the point where she fucking like smacked me and hit me.
Really?
Shit. Yeah. Pushed me, this and that, challenged me to fight. It was a
they're out there. I know.
Yeah, it's like and obviously I was like I mean, slamming the door, going crazy. Obviously I didn't touch her. I teach women self-defense.
Right.
I teach women how to defend themselves. But it's kind of funny, right? Because she can hit me. Obviously I can't hit her. If you shared the story, somebody would laugh at it.
Yeah, and they will.
Well, she hit you. But other way around.
It usually is kind of funny sometimes.
Yeah.
Which is horrible.
Because it's, you know, and finally I got out of this relationship, which was probably the worst relationship I've ever been in, but the one I learned the most about. And after that, I realized I needed to stay single. And I remember my coach told me, now you're going to coast the ship and you're going to learn to be alone. You're going to learn to eat alone, go to the movies alone, sleep alone.
Yeah.
For 2 years, I was alone. Not one date, one kiss.
Wow.
I didn't even sleep with a girl for 2 years. I was a fucking ninja, man.
Yeah, you were a monk.
I was like cleansing my soul.
Yeah, that's commitment. That's impressive.
Bro, I didn't have sex for 2 years.
But how much did you learn about yourself through that period?
Every man should go through it.
Yeah.
Every man should go through it. Because after that, you're not afraid to be alone.
Yeah.
You're like, what? You don't want to be with me? Oh, come, let me walk you to the door. Thank you very much. Bye-bye. Click next.
It's weird when you start like doing things alone, how natural it feels. I used to live in this apartment where it was like just above a movie theater. So I have a Friday night where I was bored and I'm like, I'm not doing anything. None of my friends want to do anything. And I can look out my window and see what time the movie starts. So I would throw a beer in my jacket or two. And I would go down six flights of stairs, walk out the door, and I was at the movie theater. I mean, it was literally, I'm sitting on my couch. I could watch Netflix. And within 3 minutes, I'm inside of a movie theater. It was that convenient. And like, when it's that easy, you're like, oh, watching movies not that hard by yourself. And you start getting to know. It's like, it's kind of nice doing things by yourself. You get to appreciate who you are.
I have to go. I go alone. People are like, oh, you can go to the restaurant alone. I'm like, yeah, why? Yeah,
you sit at the bar. Oh, that's great.
With you. I'm good.
I love it.
I travel alone. I go to restaurants alone. I don't.
No, it's completely normal. People make it seem like it's weird, but it's not.
To me, when you could be alone with yourself and your thoughts, some people can.
Yeah.
It's like, how are you going to learn to be? You can't be with somebody else if you can't be with yourself.
Yeah.
And if you want to learn how to be alone, you got to be alone. Look in the mirror. You got to write down some questions. Yeah. You got to analyze yourself. Think of what you're thinking and write it down.
Some of the best moments you'll ever have. Like some of the most like insightful moments. This past weekend, I ran a Spartan race. I ran a 13-mile Spartan beast. And awesome. It was a beast. This was a rough one. But
I'm a Spartan,
by
the way.
Hey, there you go, man. I like that. Do you run the races?
Yeah, I run it. No, but my grandmother's from Sparta. That's why.
Oh, yeah, because you're actually Greek, right? Right, yeah. Right. That's amazing, man. But anyway, so I went to Asheville, North Carolina. I say with air quotes, because it's really in the middle of nowhere, North Carolina. But the couple that I went with, they were what do you call it? Volunteering the day before, and I had to finish some stuff up. And I'm like, I'm just gonna hang out in town. And like, we're gonna be gone for like several hours. What are you gonna do? I'm like, I don't know, this town seems kind of cool. I'm just gonna walk around. I'll probably have a beer, I'll probably have a coffee, and I'll just have a good time. And they were like, are you sure? And they're like, let me text you the address of the hotel. And I'm like, no, I'll be in town. Like, you guys call me when you're back. And, you know, they called me up like 6 hours later. Like, where are you at? I'm like, oh, I'm hanging out at this bar. I've been writing this notebook, having a couple beers. I'm having a good time. Like, I'm okay being alone. And I had a great time. I really did. And it's nice, especially being somewhere where you don't know anybody, because no one's going to bug you. No one's going to harass you. And you can actually, like, be alone with your thoughts.
You know? I hate it sometimes. Like, I'm in a place alone.
Yeah.
I want to be alone. And then people see me. They're like, hey, Nick, what's up? I'm like, fuck.
Yeah. I gotta hide the bandana. It's like my Clark Kent glasses, you know. I can take that off. No one knows who I am.
but I think, like I said, I always tell, and it's kind of, I want to teach my son the same stuff. Like, you know what I mean? I want to teach him, Noah, learn to be alone, learn to love yourself, learn to respect yourself. If you don't respect yourself, nobody else will respect you. It's as simple as that.
Well, and when you're comfortable being alone, you don't get that desperation. You don't feel like you have to find the next girl and you rush it and get into a toxic relationship where it's like some girl shows up and maybe you're desperate and you see her and you're like, you know what? I'm good. I can be comfortable on my own. I'll wait for the right one. And
you see the red flags. They're doing this and you're like, oh, wow. Okay. Let me just move it out of the way. Second red flag.
I see him after the divorce.
I'm like, okay, there it is. It's time for me to go.
Yeah, when I was 19, those red flags, I was looking at them with rose-colored glasses, you know.
the love goggles. Oh, she's the one. I love her.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
She's going to make me so much better. She's going to complete me. Oh, fuck. I hear that shit. I want to smack somebody.
It makes me really uncomfortable when people start saying, especially the younger people, it's like, oh, you got to find the right girl before college where they all get snatched up. And I'm like, well, don't rush it. Because in my experience, most guys ruin it by getting the wrong girl too quickly. You know, don't make me pressured.
Theory, and maybe I'm wrong, men should not get married under 35, even 40.
I'm with
you. Valentine is right here. He's like,
I'll get yelled at by somebody, but I agree.
but again, this is maybe from my experience, or at least your career and where you're going, life should be set before you get married.
Yeah, I agree. I look back at myself when I was younger, and I'm like embarrassed. I'm like, God, look at that pudgy faced idiot. He didn't know what he was. He didn't know what he didn't know. And then, you know, the other thing is like, I got hung up on the idea of I'm going to have family, I'm going to have kids, I'm going to be at this place. And I wasn't thinking about my career, where I was going to go. And I think to a lesser extent, the same thing with women. I think women in college should not be like in love with some girl or some guy, because they're going to be focusing on the career, and then they're going to be with some, you know, frat boy that they fall in love with, and he's going to go to Chicago and she's going to have some career in Boston. And then what if she gives up on her dream to go to Chicago, and then he bails on her before they even graduate, you know?
And this is one. This is why I always tell people, male or female.
Yeah.
Especially, I'm going to talk to the men because I could relate more to men.
Exactly.
Like build. Like, I mean, you set your goal and your plan. Don't change it for anybody.
Yeah.
Like it could maybe shift a little bit, but don't change your career and your plan and your life for somebody, because if she leaves you, you'll resent her. You'll be angry at yourself. You'll be mad.
Yeah.
So I'm like, you know, this is where I'm going. This is what I'm doing. You want to come on board? Great.
Yeah.
But like, I mean, it's
sick. No, I completely agree with that. And I live that. I actually,
and women will respect that.
Because they will.
Usually. They want a male who's more or less alpha, who knows what he wants, where he's going, who's got a purpose. You know what I mean? If you want to track, like, I mean, sometimes I've met guys who are like, they're out of shape. They're lazy. They're like, I don't know many of these people, because and most of the people around me are, to a certain extent, have the same values I have.
Right.
But I know guys like this, and I'm like, wait, you're not athletic. You sit at home. You're lazy. You're not ambitious, and you want the beautiful supermodel who has, you know, the six-figure job. Are you fucking delusional? Like,
well, what do you tell those guys? So the – because I get some of these guys that will talk to me, and I see them every day, and they're becoming more common. Like, what do you tell the guy that's, you know, like you said, out of shape, delusional, he's spending most of his days playing video games? Like, because I think some of those people think they're always going to be that way, but they don't have to be. Like, what do you tell them to change their life?
You know what? Here's the thing, right?
Right.
One, it's like, you just got to tell them straight out. Yeah. You know, like, look, man, you're out of shape.
Yeah.
You don't have a pot to piss in. You're playing video games all day. You have no career, no future, no goals, but you have these big dreams. It makes no sense.
Right.
So what you have to do, what I do is I take a paper and a pencil and it's like, let's write them down. It's almost like an algorithm where you're actually showing them that what you want, where you are and what you want doesn't make sense.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense.
You got to make them realize it. If their ego's too big, you got to say, well, obviously you're not ready to change it yet. When you are, you let me know.
Right.
When you're ready, I'll work with you. Let's do it. Then on top of that, what you, as well as you need to learn, and I'm the proof of that. You are the creator, the engineer, the designer of your life. Shit's not just going to magically fall. Get up off your ass.
Right.
Put your priorities. Okay, make a list. Like, I have my priorities. And this is, I'm going to share it with you. Priority number one is work. My work comes before my son. People tell me, well, what do you mean? I go, what the fuck's this kid going to eat?
Exactly.
What is he going to eat? This idea, oh, well, you know, the child comes first. No, my career comes first because I have to support this kid. I have a mortgage to pay, a car to pay. I take him to Greece every summer. I travel with him.
Yeah.
I want to give him shit that I never got. So yes, my work comes first.
100%.
The second is my personal development, my personal growth, working on myself, coach, acupuncture, therapist, whatever it is, my health. If I'm strong and I'm good, guess what? I can give. I can take care of others. Third are my sister, my son, my girlfriend. And then they go down. And once you figure those out, then you know, okay, where does my energy go? Before I go have a drink with a bunch of friends at a bar, it's because all my priorities are met, because that's the bottom of the list. So my work comes first. After you, I have another podcast and I'm training somebody. Yeah. Right? And I was up at 4:30 a.m.
Me too. Well, 5, right? But yeah.
But yeah. I love it. I don't Me too. Feel it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I get that. You know, people make fun of me every once in a while. I got this group of people I talk to on Twitter all the time, and I'll joke and be like, oh, I'm having a beer. You know, don't let the other people know, because we're supposed to never drink alcohol, right? And they go, yeah, you can have a beer. Shut up. Because I know I'm going to wake up tomorrow morning, and before I'm even awake, you'll be done running 10 miles. You know, it's like, you got to see what you can do, what you can't do. And I love the idea of putting yourself first, because it sounds weird to say you should put yourself before your kid, but what does your kid do but watch you? You know, like.
But you see, this is out of the train of thought. Yeah. What I said, because I could only talk. Look, I don't have a high school education. I didn't get the child in parenthood and loving parents. I'm mostly self-educated in everything I've learned. I have a lot of fucking life experience, man. I've lived fucking 10 lives, man. I mean, I'm fucking, sometimes I'm exhausted.
Yeah, and it shows. Life, I can tell.
I'm like, but I gained a lot of knowledge. So at the end, anybody could tell me, well, Nick, you're wrong. Like, fuck you. This is what worked for me.
Yeah.
Fuck you. This is what worked for me. And what worked for me is Nick is number one. I need to be number one, because if I'm going to give and take care of others, I have to be mentally strong, physically strong. I have to be able to provide for my family. And I need that. So that is my priority.
Well, right? And your kids watching you, right? So like, you got into karate when you were at a young age, right? And now what does your kid do? He's also into, was it jiu-jitsu? Was it taekwondo? What is jiu-jitsu. Yeah. All right. So I did taekwondo as a little kid. I went through the ranks as a kid and got to be a black belt, and now I'm doing this again as an adult. So I'm like a red belt now. But I'm doing it to get my 11-year-old or 12-year-old now. He needs a discipline. He needs to understand that, you know, he can sit at home and play video games and have nothing to show for it. Or
that shit, man.
I know. But he's starting to get into the whole karate thing, where he realizes that if he works hard in karate, And more importantly, he's learning that if he doesn't work hard in karate, he doesn't get rewarded. And that's what's been really interesting to watch. And he gets upset about it. And I don't know, you're probably better at this than I am, but how do you explain to like parents how instrumental taekwondo or martial arts or any kind of a physical sport can be to a kid? Like, it teaches them so much, you know?
You know what? Number one, they're in a group setting.
Yeah.
Right? Two, you know, the teacher doesn't give a shit about what your parents think. A good teacher, me personally, right. I'm like, actually, sometimes I train kids, and the parents, like, only privates, and the parent sits there and they're criticizing the kid. I'm like, stop. I'm like, I'm gonna ask you to leave.
Yeah.
Because it's my session, his session with me and him. You're not helping. Right. Three, it's gonna help with his self confidence.
Yeah.
Right. Hopefully the instructor's not, okay, you suck, but you're going to get a belt. No, you got to train harder.
Right.
You know, there's a competition. Guess what? You're not all first place. There's a first place, a second place, a third place.
Yeah. I like that. I love that assertiveness. I didn't realize it.
You didn't make it too bad, too sad.
Yeah, you know exactly. What I
mean? Because later on in life, your boss won't give a fuck about your feelings. That's the fucking truth.
Yeah. So, I take
it from somebody who was fucking flipping burgers at McDonald's at 16.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I started doing this Taekwondo thing for a while, and now I'm assisting and teaching. So I know so little compared to most of these people, but it's given me this window into understanding the way they teach the kids. And one thing that blew my mind is that, like, the big thing for a white belt to go to a yellow belt was not about the stances. It wasn't about if they listened, it wasn't about if they did this or that. The big thing was if they could yell loud and assertively, and they hammer that on the kids. Like, hey, make sure you're loud. Make sure you say hut really loud on that first move on your forearm. Make sure you say yes, sir, really loud. And I didn't understand why that was such a big deal until it was explained to me as a teacher. And the idea is that if somebody wants to kick your ass and you're a little kid and you look them in the eye and you're loud and you're confident, 60% of the time that like ends the fight. Like the bully doesn't want to fight the kid that's assertive.
I said to my son, look at me in the eyes. My son wouldn't look at me in the eyes.
Yeah, and most people won't.
I'm like, no. Like, and now if I brought my son to you on air, he's like, he'd be talking to you like this. I was doing a podcast and he called me and he goes, can we put your son on the podcast? I'm like, sure. He's like, hey, who's this? And he starts talking to the guy. What do you think?
That's awesome.
Oh, yeah, he's cool. Like, he's very, and again, but that's because as a father, they're not looking at what you're saying. They're looking at what you're doing.
Yeah.
That's so important.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I don't smoke.
Yeah, me either.
If my son smokes,
not anymore.
I'm going to freaking slap him. I don't care if somebody gets mad at me. I'll be like, no, you're not smoking. You do drugs. I never did drugs. You ain't doing drugs.
Right.
That's same. One thing. You know what I mean? I used to work in the clubs, bro. They used to give me this shit for free.
Yeah.
Right? I'm a doorman. I was dealing with all these gangs. Here, man, you want some? I never took it because I always said to myself, okay, Nick, you don't have a high school diploma. You have no education. You live on your own. That's the last shit you really need in your life. So I never touched it. Plus, I do have addictive behavior. I'm a little bit extreme.
So yeah, I can see that.
If I take drugs, I'm going to be fucking eating that shit. So I never touched it. I never touched it.
Yeah, I hear you, man.
I maybe smoked 10 joints in my whole life.
Yeah, that doesn't
count. My whole life. But like, I mean, but I never did like blow or speed or X. Because I knew if I did that shit, I would fuck it up. And I saw kids, good kids from good families.
Yeah.
Who pissed their fucking life away on that shit, man. Who really fucked up their life on cocaine and shit. You know, to the point where they started owing money to like gangsters and shit. And I knew these kids. And I'm like, Nick, you know this guy? I'm like, yeah, he owes us money. I'm like, oh, fuck, what are you doing, man? These guys aren't fucking around. You know what I mean? They'll fucking go collect from your parents. They don't give a shit. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
And it's like, so I'm, coming back, it's like, you got to lead by example. Your son watches you teach. He's going to fucking be wild. My dad teaches. He watches you train. He's going to train. He's going to watch you. He's going to hear you talk and what you're saying. He's going to listen to that.
Yeah. No, so I mean,
you want to be a good father. Don't do the talking, do the walking.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Simple as that.
And it's easy to say. I look back at my life. I'm like, why am I teaching these kids how to do karate? Because that's what my dad did. You know, I watched him teach kids how to play soccer. And the amazing thing was, like, this is back in, like, the early 90s. You know, like, I remember there was going to be, like, a soccer league, and they couldn't find a coach. And there was they couldn't figure out who was going to do it, so they were going to cancel the whole league or the whole team. And they're like, oh, I guess our school's not going to have a soccer team because we can't find a coach. My dad goes, I'll do it. And they go, oh, do you know how to play soccer? He goes, no, I'll figure it out.
Awesome.
This is before YouTube, but like I was young. I was probably like 6 or 7. But I remember watching my dad. He went to some, I don't even know how he got it. He probably ordered off the mail, but he had like a VCR or a VHS tape. He put it in the VCR. He was watching like soccer training videos and he figured it out. And you know, like, I'm not saying they won the championship, but they won games. You know, he made it work.
You know what? To me, that is a sign of intelligence.
Yeah.
I always tell people, say yes and figure it out.
Yeah, no, he was an intelligent man. He was the guy that would just kind of figure it out, like you said, you know. And I didn't realize it until much later in life, but I was the same way, you know. Like I didn't necessarily want to be that guy. And I'm like, all right, well, if no one else will, I'll figure it out. It's funny how I think a lot of people are capable of figuring it out if they're put in that position where they have to figure it out. You know, somehow you just find a way.
A lot of the times, I mean. A lot of the decisions I made, a lot of who I became, happened by having no other fucking choice, man. It's like, shit, I gotta figure this shit out. And you know, when you have nothing or nobody to fall back on, you're like, I can't go crying to my mom and dad. They're not there.
You just figure it out.
It's like, okay, who am I gonna go to? I there's no safety net.
Yeah.
The con of that is, fuck, it sucks.
Yeah, and you probably do screw it up sometimes, you know, like But
oh fuck, so many times. I failed so many times, bro. Like, yeah. I don't even like to use the word failure because, like, when people tell me, "Aren't you scared?" I'm like, "No. Well, what if you fail?" To me, like, I've replaced failure with, I tried something that didn't work that way, and I'm just going to try another. That's it.
I like that. Failure.
It's like, yeah. I tried it this way, it didn't work. I'm going to do it this way. There's no such thing as failure. Like, to me, that is like, no, it just didn't work. I'm going to do it this way.
I've explained this a few times, but it's hard to understand if you haven't been through it, but the most successful people I know are the people that have failed multiple times. And I haven't even failed a ton of times, although we'll get there. but you know, the most like instrumental moments of my life have been through failure. You know, things where I screwed up or where I was like, all right, I can't go that way, so we're going to go this way and try something different. And then lo and behold, it's better. But had that worked the first time, like, you know, maybe my life would have been a little bit less good. Who knows?
Who knows? Yeah.
Yeah.
But you can't live life with regrets either. You know what I mean? I look at my life and I'm like, I try to look at, you know, and I used to be a very negative person. Now I'm a very positive person. I have moments where I'm like, fuck, shit, damn. But like, I mean, 80% of the time, I'm good.
Yeah.
But I try to look at everything that happens, be like, okay, how do I turn the shitty moment into a great moment?
Yeah.
Anything that happens. How do I take this and turn it into something great?
What made you change that mindset? How did you go from, because most people are kind of like railroaded from a failure. But now I feel like you kind of bounce back. What made you change?
See, the more you fail and you get up,
yeah,
like, you know, the easier it becomes.
Yeah.
To a point where it just, it doesn't faze you anymore. It's like taking a punch to the face.
Yeah.
Right?
That first punch stings, but after a while you get used to it, right?
After the, like, 500th punch, you're like, eh. Okay. It's the same thing, you know what I mean? And I tell people, like, your mindset, the way it's wired.
Right.
Whether it's in self-defense, whether it's in the ring, whether it's in your relationship, whether it's in your life, whatever it is, you want to wire it the same way. I'm a fighter in anything I do. So before I throw in the towel, I give it everything I have. And that wiring is what always keeps me going. And I've conditioned myself, reprogrammed myself through repetition and constantly doing that. I'm always consistent as much as possible with my values in all the areas of my life. So I'm not, you know, like I met a friend. She's a girl I worked with a little bit. She's like this yogi, but she smokes and she drinks. I'm like, kind of doesn't go.
Yeah.
if I'm preaching being like, you know, like what I'm preaching right now to you,
yeah.
Like I won't even say preaching, but like I'm giving you how I am as a person. You're taking it as maybe I'm bullshitting for all you know, right? Yeah. But then people who know me are like, fuck. People who know me on and off camera, you're really the same guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I look at you and it's like you talk about self-defense, you talk about taekwondo or jiu-jitsu, and like I can tell by looking at you, you're in shape. You seem like you practice what you preach, even without talking to you, just at first glance. And I think that means a lot, you know. And it's something I battle with a lot, which it's kind of funny. But you know, when I first started this whole path to manliness thing, you know, I was like, okay, shape. Like I wasn't necessarily, you know, the manliness guy, but I would look back 3 months later and say I was in better shape than I was, and that was like the big thing. It's like you gotta practice what you're preaching, otherwise, you know, people are gonna start saying like, "Wait, I don't think what you're selling works because it doesn't even work for you, right?"
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I can see that.
Sometimes it's for you. I always tell people just try to be a little bit better than you were yesterday.
Yeah.
Like just 1 inch. Just, yeah. You know, one inch baby steps every day.
And it adds up.
It adds up, man. Don't set like goals. Like, I mean, every year before New Year's Eve, I set my goals,
yeah,
my objectives. I make a graph and I'm pretty good. I stick to them, but I set realistic goals.
Right.
I put timelines and then I set, you know, the dream goal. You know,
yeah,
what I mean?
I do.
You know, and that's there. And whether I get it or not, it's fine. But it's there. It's a dream. It's a goal. If I get it, I get it. I don't put so much pressure on myself either to be like, you know, I got to do this. I mean, you also have to enjoy the journey. Be like, you know, like what you're building now. It's like, you got to enjoy the process. If you don't, you might as well take off the headphones and say, fuck this shit. I don't want to do
this. Yeah, no, for real. I it's one of those things where I figured out pretty quickly. And it's like, I want to be at, I don't know where I want to be, but it's always, I want to be a little bit farther than where I'm at. And, you know, I look back 6 months ago, my goals were so different. I had such humble goals. It's grown a lot faster than I expected. You know, I think that's natural. I mean, how long have you been working on this? You act like you've been doing this for a few years now, right?
Well, I started my own company and my business, let's say from the day I started my YouTube channel.
Right.
It's going to be 10 years.
Wow.
And I sold myself short. When I set my goals, and I wish my best friend George was here. When I set my goals, I set them short. Yeah. I like 2-3 years ago, I accomplished everything I wanted on that list and I doubled it.
Yeah.
So now I'm like, fuck, Nick, you really sold yourself short. So now I made a list and I was like, fuck it. I'm going to aim for the fucking fucks, for not the stars, for fucking Pluto. I'm going to go the fucking way. I don't care.
Oh, I get it.
I'm a lot wiser. I learn more about myself and I'm not afraid to set. Some people are too scared to set high dreams.
I think, they fear disappointing themselves, right?
Yeah, and you can't. Yeah. Like, I mean, you can't beat yourself. That's something, I'm very hard on myself.
Right.
Very, very hard. Now I learned, like, Nick, I tell myself, Nick, chill. It's okay.
Yeah.
It's going to get there.
One thing I've learned through doing this is a lot of people, they don't find the guy that's, you know, just getting started. They find the guy after it's been successful because it's gotten popular enough where they find him, right? So, like, a lot of people come up to me now, and they're like, oh, my God, your website's amazing. I'm like, yeah, it's amazing today. Like, you should have seen it on the first week. You know, it's like dog shit. And, you know, like, explain, like, what your first 6 months to a year looks like. Right?
Man. But people always see the end result.
Yeah.
But if I put on a videotape and I said, okay, let me watch your journey, you'd be like, 80 or 90% of the people would be like, fuck this shit.
It's rough. I mean, that first 6 months alone, I mean, it's just all grinding. And what's frustrating is that you just don't know. Like, I remember doing it.
You're grinding this shit and you're like, is this thing going to ever take off?
I don't know.
My time?
I got.
Are you ever going to know who I am or what I do?
In January of this year, I had more hits to my website than the entire year of 2018.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah, and that year I started in 2018, and like those first few months, like honestly, the first day I got 3 hits, and I'm like, well, it's not zero. You
know? That's the right attitude to have. I'll take them 3.
And then, like the third day, I think I had like 50 because I got lucky, and I was like, all right, this is actually a little scary now. I didn't expect this much, and you know, now I look back on it, it's so exponential, but I feel like that first 6 months or so, you just got to grind it out, and maybe you just don't know, but most people just
When I started my YouTube videos, I knew nothing about YouTube. I was just posting videos.
I still don't know about YouTube.
I never even knew YouTube would even like take off.
Oh, wow.
My goal was to get 50,000 subscribers. I have 500,000.
That's a lot.
Between two channels, right? I have 380 on Nick Drossos and 210,000 on Code Red Defense.
Wow.
I didn't even know you could monetize this shit. Then I was making money off it. I'm like, fuck, I still make money off YouTube. And I'm like, fuck, shit. And then I wanted to travel the world and teach seminars. I'm like, fuck, right. I did a seminar in New York City. I did one in Athens. I did one in Vienna. I'm going to get to Montreal. I have UK, Ireland, Scotland. I want to do all these places. I'm like, man, how the fuck did I get? But people don't know. It's 10 years.
Yeah.
I'm grinding at this shit. 10 years, man. Like, I mean, I go to meetings and I bring my son sometimes because I only have him on weekends, right? And I have a meeting and I can't miss it. So right. I'm like, Noah, you know, you're coming with Daddy. I have a meeting. And he's like, oh, Daddy. I'm like, I know, no, it won't be long. You know, I go, just listen. I mean, I'm thinking, fuck, I'm teaching you something. Just right. sit and listen.
Does he appreciate you know, it at all? Or is it like, I wish I was home playing Fortnite?
Yeah, Fortnite. I almost broke the Daddy meeting last night. I was like, smash it. I'm done with it. I'm going to Fortnite your ass. Stop playing this shit. But, I mean, but at the end, I want him to be part. I want him to listen. Just,
you know. I grew up playing video games too much and chasing girls and playing sports, all that stupid stuff that doesn't really matter. And my dad was very intelligent and very successful, and I didn't think I was paying attention until I went to college because I had the same major he did. And I started taking tests, and I was killing them. I actually set the curve for one of the tests in the class of like 600 people. And I'm not the smartest guy in the world. Like I definitely did not have the best grades, but I did set the curve in that class. And you don't know what you listen to. So like, even though he's sitting there and maybe he's not paying attention, somehow like a little bit, he's paying attention more than the kids that have the deadbeat dad watching.
You know what? They're listening to what we're saying, man.
They do.
There are lots, like, kids today are sharp. They're a little bit, maybe I'm wrong. I don't want to say, but I mean, it's only normal. Like, I look at my son. He doesn't have the urgency I have.
I don't think any of them do. I don't think they need to. It's just their lives are too comfortable.
They don't have the survival. I mean, I was 11 years old doing the groceries on my own already.
Yeah. Yeah. It was I grew up, like, with a silver spoon, right? But, like, I remember my dad explaining to me one time, like, hey, if you can't find a job, it's okay. I'll just let you work for my company. You can stay at the basement. I'm like, oh, shit, that sounds horrible. And that was my motivation. I'm like, I don't want to be the kid that stayed in my parents' basement because I couldn't find a job. So I went on, like, 20 interviews until I found one that they would take me.
You know what? It's for me, like, I remember growing up, right? Like, I mean, when I was 13, my dad's like, you know, and my mom's like, well, now you got to start pulling your weight.
Yeah.
To me, it was normal. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
Because I didn't know, right? So I was working.
It should be normal.
I'm 13. My dad's taking me to watch the buildings from 48, right? So I was going to school and I was washing. I remember I was waking up. I was tired. I was exhausted. I was in class. I was fucking falling asleep. And then at 16, when I got settled school, that's when I basically kind of got kicked out and dropped out at the same time. And then I remember I wanted to go back to high school a couple of years later. And that's when I was diagnosed with ADHD and dyslexia because I couldn't figure out why the fuck I can't learn this shit. And they wanted to put me in Ritalin back then.
Right.
And I remember I was maybe 18 or 19 around that time. And I remember telling the doctor, I said, Doc, look, call me dumb, call me slow, but I'm not putting that shit in my body.
Good for you.
He goes, yeah, but you need it to focus. I go, you know what? I'll figure it out, man. He goes, because I remember asking him, I go, how does this work? So I take the pill, I get smart, I'm off the pill, I'm dumb.
Not really.
I'm clueless now. I'm clueless. I'm just like, he goes, no, you take it and you're able to focus and concentrate better. And what happens when I'm off it? Well, you go back. I go, yeah, but that really doesn't solve the problem. He goes, yeah, but that's your best bet. You need it. I'm like, I'll fucking figure it out. And I never took it.
Yeah. I think that's smart.
I created my own system. You know what I mean?
I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, but I look at all the kids that took Ritalin growing up, and they didn't seem to do better than the other ones.
No, because it numbs and slows down your nervous system.
Yeah.
Guess what? Eat well, fucking exercise.
Yeah.
Stay away from unstableness, like toxic or unstable homes, because that creates a lot of trauma.
Makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
So you need calmness. So look, I'm like a pit bull. I need to fucking train.
Yeah. No, I get it.
I eat well. I exercise. I listen to positive things. I'm surrounded by positive people. I meditate. I practice my gratitude as much as I could, and I'm fucking calm, man. I'm good.
I never want to say I get. I'm bad at saying I don't get things because I probably do, but I would say I don't get anxiety. But at the same time, like when I get a little rattled, which is probably the same word, I have to meditate. I just got to sit there and breathe, and then 5 minutes later, I'm okay. You know,
and that's amazing.
Yeah, but it took me 30 years to figure it out, though. You know,
it's amazing that you could do it, that you could say it, and I think that everybody. meditation doesn't have to be sit and breathe. It could be just
closing
your eyes and going to a good place in your life, visualizing something, writing a goal, being grateful for something, and like a car, right?
When you remember,
it shifts, right? So you just gotta my coach always tells me, be kind to your mind.
I like that. There's these weird things that I do a lot of that for so long, like society kind of taught me not to do. One of them was meditation. Another one was yoga. I used to, my girlfriend would like leave the house. She would go somewhere and like she would be gone and I would sneak off to the computer and watch yoga videos and then do yoga. You know, and it was like, I was like, cheating on her with yoga, but I was so embarrassed that somebody would watch me doing it and I wasn't committed to it yet. I wasn't sure if it was like something that's going to help me. But then like after I'd done this for like 2 or 3 months, she wanted to do yoga and we started doing it together. And she's like, how do you know how to do that pose already? She's like, wait, why are you so good at this?
I've been sneaking on you. I'm a yoga instructor on the side.
She probably thought I was like cheating on her with a yoga girl. You know? Like that. I thought about getting into it. I got moments. I can do like the crow's pose, but I need to get back into it. I haven't done much. I still do meditation, but I've gotten away from the yoga. I'll tell you what, yoga helped me out when I started doing Taekwondo for the first time and doing like crescent kicks and all those like high kicks. Man, I probably would have hurt myself if it weren't for yoga. But
Look, you know what? Like, I mean, I'm a firm believer. Like, I mean, I don't take medication for anything. I don't even fucking take an Advil. I broke my ribs in June, like really bad, because I've broken them a few times.
Yeah.
And they wanted to put me on painkillers. I'm like, no, fuck it. I didn't take anything. I toughed it out. And
good for you.
I mean, unless I really
it's need hard, isn't it?
I won't.
I'm the same way. I won't do it either.
I'll go to do acupuncture. I'll see an osteopath. Yeah.
I think a lot of mental toughness can get you through those moments. Cause I had an eye surgery 3 years ago. this is a weird story. I'm only 32 and I was 28 at the time, but I had a retinal detachment in both my eyes. Okay. And multiple times the doctors came up to me and they're like, are you in MMA? And I'm like, no. Like, do you fight often? Do you get into bar fights? I'm like, no. Like, do you have a lot of like head trauma? And I'm like, I played football in high school like 10 years ago and they couldn't figure it out. And they're like, I don't know why it doesn't matter. But like my mom had some issues with it. So maybe there's some genetics too, but it's still strange at that age. But anyway, so I had to go have eye surgery. I was literally going blind and I got lucky that I caught one of the eyes very quickly and it's 100% perfect. The other eye is not great. Okay. So, it's actually one of my eyes and I never admit to anybody in public which one, but one of my eyes is a little bit of a blind spot and every once in a while when I'm sparring somebody will jab me and I will just never see it and I have to lie and I'll just lie and I'm like I didn't see it coming. That was a good move, but in reality I just my eye was not capable of seeing it. But I don't tell anyone.
You need to tell them because
I don't tell anyone. exactly right. But so I go through the surgery and at the end of it they're like, oh, you're gonna wake up with some pain, so here's a prescription for some whatever. And like this is back when I was married to my drug addict wife and they're like, oh, okay, I'm gonna be blind for a day and I'm gonna have these hardcore drugs. I'm like, no. I ripped the script up right when they gave it to me. I'm like, I'm not taking it. I'm like, I'll take some Tylenol. I'll figure it out. You know, and actually, I was in a lot of pain for like 8 hours. And after that, I was okay.
I only took painkillers once. I only took painkillers once when I was 18 or 19. The first time I broke my ribs, like really bad.
Yeah.
And I remember it was like the first time I felt like what it feels to be on drugs. It was really strong. And I was like, I was like this. I was like,
it's a weird feeling.
I was like,
I don't like it. I've done Vicodin. That's probably the hardest kind of drug I've ever done. Doesn't really agree with me. You know, I don't necessarily get the good effects of it. I just don't feel great. I just feel woozy and out of it.
So I'm. Yeah. All right, man. It was a blast talking to you, but I gotta go.
Yeah, perfect. This is a good time.
50% off, you know, just
it's like true. I also have on my program, I have a program like a self-defense program and all that stuff, and I'm offering a 50% off, So I'm doing this for Black Friday till Monday, but then I'll send you a link for your people too as well if they want. And I'm actually going to give you access to the program as well for free, so you can go and watch all my videos. I have like all my self-defense stuff in there.
I appreciate that.
Videos.
Yeah.
It's really good stuff. And I'm actually, I made a self-defense program for kids now.
Yeah.
That's going to be in there too. So I'm going to send you all that too.
We'll definitely get these links all in the podcast and everything. And we'll put them up on my Twitter and all that. So this is awesome. Nick, it's been great talking to you.
This Man, it's amazing. Fun. Are you New York? You're New York, huh?
No, I'm in Tennessee.
You're in Tennessee. Oh, yeah. I'm a Krav Maga. Have you heard of Real World Self-Defense?
Sounds familiar. I don't know him. No. Okay.
He's a Krav Maga instructor. He came to train with me all the way from Tennessee to here. He came to
weekend
in June.
That's awesome.
Yeah, he came. It was like fucking cool. We trained together.
That's really cool. I took a really small amount of Krav Maga when I was younger. I learned a little bit of it, but I've done much more Taekwondo and a little bit of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu.
Well, when you mix all those and you put some of the Krav Maga principles, they're fucking awesome. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
And on my site, I have all that stuff too, you know?
So, very cool.
Man, it was freaking awesome talking to you, man.
You're
a cool cat, bro. You're cool, man.
Hey, thanks, Nick.
I connect with people like this sometimes. Like, I mean, it depends on the podcast, but it
depends. Yeah.
I mean,
I'm honored, man.
I could have went for a couple more hours with you easily.
I easily could. Well, we can do it again if you want some time.
For sure. I'd love that, man.
Yeah, I'd love to do it too. That was great.
All right. Take care. Thank you guys for everybody listening.
Thank you, Nick. Nick, where can they find you, by the way?
Best place is to go on my website, nickdrossel.com.
All right. We'll post all the links to that. And then your social media, YouTube, is pretty prominent. Yeah, so we'll post links to those down below. Awesome. Man. Thank you, Nick. This is a great time.
Thanks.
If you enjoyed this episode of the Pat Simonis podcast, be sure to write us a review. That way we can reach more men that are lost and need direction in their life. And if you feel that you are lost and you need direction in your life, or you simply are looking for brotherhood, a sense of belonging, a place where you can be a man, a traditional man, and be around other men who are motivated and working to build something themselves, check out patreon.com/pathtomanliness to gain access to the private Discord server where you can connect with other highly motivated individuals.